I brush Mariante's hair as fast as I can without upsetting her. My oldest daughter, like so many firstborn children, seems in tune with my every mood since her birth. Just 6 years old now, she senses my wave of anxiety about her father's impending weekly visitation.
Are you scared, Mommy?
Mariante's voice sounds like a munchkin's from The Wizard of Oz, as small and sweet as she is. No, sweetie, I smile. I just don't want you to keep Daddy waiting. You look beautiful. And she does. She's wearing her blue dress with a floral collar that matches her ocean blue eyes. A barrette holds her straight brown hair back neatly. I direct her to her coat and boots while I work on getting her little sister ready. I push Meredith's plump calf into her boot. She groans.
Point your foot down, baby.
Slowly, the boot slides on. I run my fingers through her wispy brown ringlets and inspect her round face for remnants of Rice Krispies. Meredith is the antithesis of her sister. At 2, she lost her grasp on a helium balloon. She silently watched it float toward the clouds, then announced,
"God stole my balloon."
At 3, she told a bald man that he had a baby head. And now, at 4, Meredith has learned she can belch as loudly as a college boy at a frat party. My daughters are absurdly cute. I'm not the only one who thinks so. I get requests for them to be flower girls at weddings from people I hardly know. "Ready just in time," I tell them, as their father, Gregorios, Gregory for short, pulls up in his dented bright blue Jeep Cherokee. A male passenger I don't recognize is sitting next to him. I try to get a closer look. The passenger catches me, and I avert my eyes immediately. What guy would ride along with Gregory to pick up the girls? And why?
"Mama, will you pick us up tomorrow?"
Meredith asks. I dread the day she's able to pronounce her R's. "I'll pick you up on the tomorrow after tomorrow, remember?" But of course Meredith can't remember the court-appointed visitation schedule. She's only 4, and her father's visits are irregular. She doesn't know that the court only recently lifted the supervised visitation requirement that had been imposed during a restraining order, or that I pick her and her sister up at their daycare for the express purpose of avoiding unnecessary contact with him. And she shouldn't have to. Neither of them should have to know the grim details of their parents' divorce. They're still little girls, after all. I feel as if I have spent my entire 29 years of life walking on eggshells. It's March 13, 1994, and I'm 4 years out of my violent marriage. But despite the passage of time, my fear of Gregory is as strong as it was the day in March 1990 when I got back up off the floor, collected my baby girls, and fled in a taxi. The scratches and strangulation marks healed after several days, but his parting threats haunt me. "I would rather kill you than let you leave. That way, you'll die knowing the girls will have no mother and their father will be in jail. Leave, and you'll never see them again. I'll take them home to Greece. I have nothing to lose." That was by no means the first time Gregory had threatened to harm or kill me. Not even close. In our marriage, he'd isolated me from friends, taken my car, and at the lowest point, limited my access to food while I was pregnant. Eventually, he wrung my neck. All the while, he delivered the same message over and over. "You are worthless, stupid, and helpless. I am the only person you have to rely on. Without me, you are nothing." But it was his threat to take the children and disappear to his native home in Greece if I left him that got to me. He knew I could never live without my children. I remind myself that our circumstances are different now. Yes, things are still hard. I have no family around to help with the girls or with the house. We live in Alaska, a place where one battles ice and snow and long periods of continual darkness, followed by short periods of constant light. It's a place best suited for those with money. Money to buy a 4-wheel drive. Money to buy lots of insulation for the house. Fancy winter boots and coats. And airline tickets to leave the state once or twice a year for a warmer climate. All of the things I don't have.